is It Takes Two with Amy and JJ on News Radio, KFGO.
JJ Gordon. Amy is out today. Eric Johnson is behind the mic with me. Eric, how you doing today?
Doing well. It's been a while since you and I have got to do a show in studio, so I'm looking forward to today.
So am I. And let's see. Amy is out. She recently designed a jet ski, and they're putting it in the water for
today
the first time
today.
Ever. Yeah,
today is the day.
Yeah, they completely fabricated the fiberglass all on her own.
Yeah, not many people know about her mechanical engineering aptitude.
Right, yeah. She's really good with jet motors. Really good with
jet
them.
Propulsion is really just completely in her wheelhouse.
Well, let's get to this right away. Dr. Murray Cohen is on the line with us. Dr. Cohen spent 20 years with the CDC crafting policy for infection prevention and has been a semi-frequent guest on It Takes Two. Dr. Cohen, welcome back to the KFGO airwaves.
Thanks so much. It's good to talk with you again. Let me first convey my sympathies to all those North Dakotans whose lives were torn apart by that horrible tornado a couple days ago.
I tell you, Dr. Cohen, it's really weird when Mother Nature takes a toll during a pandemic, because we're such a group of people up here who immediately want to show up with chainsaws to take care of trees that have been downed, and we want to help put walls back up. And it's just this—it's this weird feeling of hurry up and wait for so many people around here.
I get it.
Dr. Cohen, we wanted to talk to you about some of the countries who have seen some pretty significant steps as far as curbing the amount of infections when it comes to COVID-19. For example, Estonia has only detected 12 infections in the past 2 weeks. Iceland, 40. Norway, 187. Ireland, 148. And we're talking about the entire country itself. So let me ask you this. Are certain countries just better at this than other countries?
Yes, they are. And I think it's instructive to look at why that is, why it works that way. These are countries that immediately jumped on surveillance, even before they had cases. When they knew that this virus had erupted in China, they started active surveillance for cases. In some of these countries, they closed schools, talking about Germany and Austria, as well as the ones you mentioned. They found every case as soon as it came up. They tested widely in the population. They traced everybody who was in contact with those cases, isolated those people until they could demonstrate through tests that they were negative. So it's just this aggressive public health response that explains their success. Now, I think we can look at these countries, by and large, not Germany or Austria, but the ones you mentioned are small countries. They have pretty small populations. They have very robust health departments and medical care systems in general. And the population's, sociology, if you will, tends to be fairly compliant. People listen, people cooperate, people care about each other. It's kind of a mark of these countries, which also is required for these kind of interventions to work. Give them a lot of credit, and I'm jealous.
Dr. Cohen, that leads into the question that popped to the top of my mind is, how much does the participation of the population play into this, and how big of a factor is that in these countries where we're seeing such low numbers?
I think that's probably the main factor. The virus doesn't care. The virus is an equal opportunity pathogen. It's just looking for fresh meat, if you will. All you can do is respond as a population, as people. Since we don't have any treatment, we don't have a vaccine, we don't have any kind of a net that can catch the virus. All you can do is respond as a population, and a population that cares about each other, which is my big beef with these people who won't wear masks. They're basically saying, I don't care about you. It's very selfish.
Your comments are echoed by the actor Tom Hanks as well. He made some pretty major news this week about the importance of masks in what his life is. And he's a COVID survivor. And he was treated pretty early on when he was in Australia. Now, a question came into our text club, Dr. Cohen, and this person says, being an island has a good advantage to control. When I look at countries like Estonia, it is blocked off in two directions by water. Iceland is not a popular stop for a lot of flights. And I wonder, is it because they're able to kind of shield themselves from the rest of the world? Does that have a big part of it?
Well, they definitely shut down, and that did play a big part of it. Other countries early on that had success from shutting down all travel were Singapore and Israel, although both of those countries are kind of getting walloped with a second wave now that they've opened up. But the travel restrictions, closing the airports, made a big difference. There's other countries that have closed the airports and hadn't made any difference at all. China closed a lot, Panama, Costa Rica, much of Central America, and the virus is raging despite closing the airports. So that gets back to the people. The people knowing what they have to do and complying with what they have to do, caring about each other.
Dr. Cohen, I think a lot of us that have been following this closely are realizing that some of the lessons for COVID-19 specifically we're learning on the fly. How long do you think it's going to take for us to fully understand this particular disease?
Well, what we understand so far is that it's a really complex disease, and we continue to learn new things about it. I think it's probably going to be something like with the Ebola virus, where it wasn't until we had thousands of survivors that happened in the outbreak in 2014 to 2016 in West Africa that we could even begin to study on the complexities and the sequelae and the follow-up conditions that survivors would suffer. And in that case, of course, there's some very bad ones, including blindness. With COVID, the ones that scare me, frankly, are these neurological effects that we've only seen a few of, but it's very consistent with this kind of virus. Reminds me a little bit of a herpes zoster, which causes chickenpox and then, you know, lays dormant in the nervous system for decades and then comes back fiercely in the disease we call shingles in the elderly people. This virus is hitting the nervous system because we are seeing neurological effects. That's the point of this loss of smell and loss of taste. There are brain effects that are being reported. Haven't been able to study them very, very much because we're just too busy keeping people alive with the respiratory aspects. But this is much more complex than a respiratory pneumonia. And I fear it's going to be a virus that once you've had it, you've got it. And then it's a matter of, you know, what sequelae or how it erupts later, very much like some of the herpes viruses.
Wow. And of course, that goes in with that idea of we're building a bridge every single day to knowledge about COVID-19. I can't imagine how much has changed in what we understand about it from the beginning of March to today. In your field, Dr. Cohen, is it when something like a disease like COVID-19 comes out, is it common that we constantly are having to change the script a little bit as we go along, as we learn about what a month looks like, what 2 months looks like?
Pretty much. This one, of course, the first word in the name of this virus is novel, meaning it was brand new. It had never been seen, you know, by the human immune system before. A lot of these that emerge aren't actually new. They're just kind of being revived. We know what to do in terms of the basics, as those successful countries did, you know, closing schools, doing surveillance, testing, tracing, and isolation. We know that all the time, but we have to learn what the particulars are of a virus. And particularly now, you know, since 2001 and anthrax in the mail, the concerns about bioterrorism, state-sponsored or otherwise, we always have to be wary and take a look at any kind of an outbreak like this and make sure that, you know, God did it to us and not some rogue country.
Dr. Cohen, I'd like to end our conversation with this, and this is something I've really been worrying about a lot lately, which is, what do you think is really, realistically, the amount of space we should be thinking of when setting policy for things like a school opening or how many restaurants should be open? For example, North Dakota is a very rural state. What's going on in North Dakota is very different than what's taking place in New York City. Yet, I think kind of as a whole, we'd like to set policy for the entire country. Is it better to do these things on a city base or state, or should we be looking at a national policy?
Well, I certainly don't believe in a national policy, not now. We should have done that at the beginning, but the genie is out of the bottle. You've hit the nail on the head. You know, everything is local. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer to your question about spacing and prevention and whatnot. You have to pay attention to your state and local health departments and work closely with them and tailor the implementation of all kinds of measures to this given location. And it could be as specific as county by county. North Dakota, you guys, congratulations. You really flattened the curve. You've had a pretty flat curve for 2 months now. So, like you said, you're not New York. You're not a hot spot. I think what I would recommend, if you know, your governor or mayor's asked me, would be go ahead and open carefully. Make sure you've got your surveillance and testing set up to catch anybody who's symptomatic very early, and probably still have people wear masks, if for no other reason, just solidarity with the rest of the country.
You know, I think that's exactly what I wanted to hear you say, Dr. Cohen. So, Dr. Murray Cohen, always a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you very much for taking some time and talking to the listeners of KFGO. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much. Bye now.